When 15-year-old Neva Craven's father drives her to Wellwood House in 1969, the silence between them speaks volumes. She's pregnant, and in her parents' eyes, she has ruined everything. Wellwood House, a home for unwed mothers in Florida, looms before her like a prison disguised as salvation. Inside, she becomes Fern from Baltimore, stripped of her identity alongside other pregnant teenagers, each assigned flower names to erase their pasts. Under Miss Wellwood's iron rule, these girls face a brutal truth. They are not here to be supported, but processed, their babies extracted, and their shame erased from society's view. The daily routine transforms them into an army of Cinderellas, cleaning obsessively while attending manipulative counseling sessions with titles like My Baby and Me, Hello and Goodbye. The message is clear: surrender your baby, return home, and pretend this never happened. But what happens when society's most vulnerable discover that their only true ally might be the very darkness they've been taught to fear? "You're a barnyard animal," Miss Wellwood tells Fern bluntly. This dehumanization defines life at the home, from censored mail to controlled nutrition designed to prevent miscarriage while limiting weight gain to precisely 17 and a half pounds. The girls face childbirth virtually unprepared. Dr. Vincent dismisses concerns with patronizing reassurance, promises that collapse when Fern finds Myrtle delivering alone in a bathroom stall, standing in blood with her lip bitten through. Each girl carries her own tragedy. Rose was abandoned after Carlton Sinclair III's wealthy father paid him to leave town. Most devastating is Holly's revelation of sexual abuse by her church leader since age 8. Now pregnant with his child, she faces the horror that the Reverend plans to adopt her baby, perpetuating the cycle of abuse. These stories reveal the girls' complete lack of agency in a system designed to control their bodies and decisions. Their futures and children are not theirs to determine. Everything changes when Fern meets the mysterious librarian Miss Parquet, who secretly gives her How to Be a Groovy Witch. Its core principle resonates deeply. A witch follows only her will, ignoring rules that don't serve her desires. After convincing the girls to try witchcraft, Fern leads them through the turnabout spell to transfer Zinnia's morning sickness to Dr. Vincent. When the spell works, Dr. Vincent violently vomiting as planned, the girls discover power they never knew existed. Witchcraft becomes their resistance against a world that has stripped them of agency. At Miss Parquet's Riverside Coven, they meet women carrying ancestral memories of persecution. Dolores explains that Miss Parquet isn't a librarian. She is the library, a living repository of witchcraft knowledge. For girls told they are sinful and powerless, witchcraft offers a path to reclaim control over their bodies and futures. Yet, this power comes with warnings. Power cannot be given. It must be taken. It is the ability to enact your will upon the world and must be earned by the spilling of blood. When Fern's newborn daughter is placed in her arms, she immediately questions her adoption decision as Charlie's tiny fingers grip her own. Asking for one more day, Fern faces Diane's shocking ultimatum: keep the baby and pay $2,000 in hidden fees, revealing the false choice these girls truly face. Miss Parquet offers Fern another opportunity to join the witches and keep her child. Though Fern refuses, she maintains a fragment of identity by signing the birth certificate as N. Craven rather than Jane Doe. Back at Wellwood House, Fern acknowledges she'll forever punish herself for choosing herself over her child. When Holly and Zinnia share their plan to help Holly escape with her baby, Fern, hardened by experience, initially dismisses it as fantasy. Her pragmatic stance reflects the harsh reality she's accepted. The system is too powerful to fight. Despite her initial resignation, Fern refuses to let Holly become another victim. When Holly refuses hospital care during labor, Fern helps deliver the baby at Hagar and Miriam's home. During the difficult birth, Holly channels primal strength as her daughter emerges, initially lifeless, until Miriam breathes life into her. When Reverend Jerry arrives to claim the baby, Fern performs desperate blood magic by biting through her tongue, summoning a supernatural storm that dismantles Wellwood House. Wind rips portraits from walls, peels roofs, and hurls debris with destructive intent. This violent storm represents the unleashed fury of generations of controlled women. As Miss Wellwood keens like a mother losing her child, the storm destroys her office and files, obliterating the administrative system that processed girls and babies like products. Miss Parquet appears to collect payment for Fern's magic. When Holly offers herself instead, several witches stand with Fern, challenging their traditions. "I'd rather burn the library than build it on bodies." Holly chooses to join the witches with her baby. "I'd rather be a monster than go back," creating an alternative to society's limited options. 54 years after her time at Wellwood, Neva Collins writes a revelatory letter about what truly happened. Her experiences shaped her career as a doula, helping women maintain autonomy during childbirth. The past resurfaces when her daughter Charlie finds an old wedding ring and traces her biological mother. Former Wellwood residents followed diverse paths. Rose established a 200-acre women's community in Arkansas. Holly found her place with the witches, possibly helping expose a minister's abuse. Zinnia became Carol Dabney, transforming her intelligence into a successful legal career. The emotional core is Neva's reunion with Charlie. Their conversation becomes a moment of truth-telling, with Neva's crucial distinction, "I didn't give you away, you were taken." This statement reveals the reality of the maternity home system, not about choice, but systematic coercion. Between 1945 and 1973, approximately 2 million babies were separated from their mothers through these institutions, creating generational trauma. The novel's witchcraft metaphor powerfully represents women's desperate resistance when denied legitimate means of self-determination. At Wellwood House, the girls forge bonds that transcend their temporary identities. Though forbidden to use real names or discuss their pasts, they create authentic connections that become most powerful when channeled into collective resistance. The coven represents an alternative community where women support rather than compete. When witches stand with Fern against Miss Parquet, they demonstrate that true solidarity means refusing to sacrifice individuals for tradition or power. This solidarity continues decades later in Rose's women's community and Neva's doula work, extending support to new generations. The novel suggests healing comes not from forgetting trauma, but from incorporating it into a more complex identity. Neva's embrace of her witch identity transforms a demonizing label into a source of power. In a world where reproductive rights remain contested, witchcraft for wayward girls reminds us that resistance takes many forms: open defiance, quiet solidarity, or the magic created when women refuse to be silenced or separated from their power.